Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
Okay, so I know that this episode is about the hip and hip arthritis, but I don't think we can overstate how important our foot health, our foot strength and mobility is to our hip. How our feet operate is so important all the way up the chain and can impact knee, hip, and low back health. And that's why we have partnered with Neboso, because they have such an incredible package of tools that are really built to optimize your foot health. I don't know if you listened to our recent episode where we interviewed Dr. Emily Splickle, who was the founder and creator of all these Neboso technology tools, but one of her huge focuses is the sensation and sensory aspect of our foot, how important it is for sensing and feeling the ground beneath us, for balance and gait, really for functional movement of all sorts. They have incredible tools like the toe splays, the kinesis board, and their stimulation socks and mats that really help to open up these feet, help us move our toes better, and really feel the ground underneath us to sense the ground and how we should be moving all the way up the chain. If you want, go check the link down in the show notes to check out all of these incredible tools that they have and use code OPTIMAL to get 15% off your entire order. All right, now let's get into the PT Pearl. So today we're going to jump in specifically on hip arthritis or hip osteoarthritis. We've done a couple other episodes on arthritic related pains, whether I think knee and back arthritis, spinal arthritis. We've done
arthritis in general.
Yeah, we've done a general episode on arthritis too. And honestly, hip arthritis, like, this is so tough, like looking through all the research, and we have someone on our team who does very thorough research for us. And there is so much. There is so much research on hip arthritis, the condition, on hip arthritis with different therapies and exercise. And it's really tough to dice through because so many of the studies might have somewhat conflicting results and takeaways and conclusions. And it can be a real mind boggle.
I mean, but that's the thing with research itself, right? And that's where I encourage you to listen to this with an open mindset of what you can do and what is the best practices for you as you continue to listen to this. Because at the end of the day, there is no, okay, you have hip arthritis, here are the three exercises you should be doing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it doesn't work
like
that.
We would love if the research pointed us to three exact exercises that everyone could do. It's just, I mean, that's the challenge, especially the more and more you research things in general, the more you start to come to the conclusion, like Jen just said, it's got to be specific to each individual person. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of the takeaways and discussion was surrounding these studies, is that, okay, here's what we found, but based on all the research that is out there, here's kind of our takeaway.
Yeah, exactly. So in general, you know, it's estimated that like 1 in 4 people will have hip osteoarthritis. And obviously it's more prevalent as you increase in age and you get older. You know, our tissues change, and that's just something that we've also talked about on other podcast episodes, how it's quite normal to see tissue changes. And with tissue changes are going to come some arthritic changes, because if we reduce the cartilage that is supporting that joint, you know, we might have some more interaction between the joints, causing potential bony growths and limitations in movement. So that is, you know, some of the clinical signs and symptoms, is that you're going to have limitation in your range of motion, tenderness around the groin. Typically, we're seeing it over the age of 60, and it's mostly predicted in the presence of a radiographic hip osteoarthritis to be able to really see it in an x-ray.
Yeah, so like seeing it on an x-ray, you're going to see reduced space in the joint, meaning we probably have less cartilage and less cushion in that joint. You're going to see bony growth of some sort, and that can be a wide spectrum of what we're going to see on a radiograph.
Interrupting your episode real quick for a little surprise. Not sure if you heard, but we're pregnant. It's so exciting to be able to say that out loud. I know I teased it back a couple weeks ago that we were trying, but we actually are pregnant. And I'm just so blessed to be able to say that out loud. And one of the number one things I always get asked, and even my friends are starting to ask me now, is what prenatal are you taking? And I know it could be so hard because there's so many supplements out on the market, right? Well, I had come across Needed and I was super interested in it because it offers products that are formulated by experts in women health and backed by clinical insights. And they have a collective of over 4,000 practitioners. And their products offer forms of nutrients your body can actually use, dosed at optimal versus bare minimum levels. And so I took this to my registered dietitian, who I trust in all things, and I said, "Do you recommend this?" And she said, "Yes, it's great. It has everything you need." And I'm like, "Okay, great." And so I have been taking Needed as a prenatal supplement before I got pregnant. And I was using some of their fertility support as well. And so was Dom. So not only do they have supplements for women, but they also have supplements to support the partner. Now, Needed offers radically better nutrition for women from conception to pregnancy to new motherhood and even beyond. And if you really get, you know, nauseous and you can't take too many pills, they have an easy to take vanilla powder that's perfect for the nauseous mom. Now, I really have no problem taking a ton of pills, so I prefer taking the pills, but I know it can be a lot for people. So they also have the powder form. And they offer premium supplements for every stage, from egg quality support for women trying to conceive to lactation support plan for breastfeeding moms to stress and sleep support that supports all women, including those in perimenopause and menopause. So I'm so grateful for this company and that they are offering 20% off of your first order with code OPTIMAL. So not only am I so excited to be using them, but now they are offering such a generous offer for all of you. So head over to thisisneeded.com and use code OPTIMAL to get 20% off your first order. That's THISISNEED.com and use code OPTIMAL for 20% off your first order. Okay, let's get back into the episode.
And I mean, we've pointed this out previously, and in the research that we did, there were two massive studies that looked at it. I think it was, one of them was like the Farmingham study. So Farmingham study showed that 15.6% of patients with frequent hip pain showed radiographic evidence of osteoarthritis, and 20.7% of hips with radiographic hip arthritis were frequently painful. So only 1 in 5 people who actually had it show up on their image actually had frequent pain. And even a lower amount of people who were frequently painful had it show up on their image, which basically says that what is showing up on your image is not equivalent to the amount of pain you have. There was another study, the Osteoarthritis Index, that had similar results. Less than 10% of people with frequent hip pain actually had radiographic arthritis, and about 23% of people with radiographic hip arthritis had frequent pain. So that all just going to say that the level of deterioration or degeneration you see on the image doesn't have to be or may not be equal to the amount of pain you're feeling.
Which is consistent with what we see across, you know, MRIs.
All sorts of different joints, yeah.
Yeah, and when we look at disc herniations, and we can see people who have disc herniations and no pain. And, you know, it goes far. And that's why the image is one portion, but don't let it, you know, determine everything in what you're going to feel and your outcomes moving forward in life. And I think that's what we want to continue to talk through today, of what you can do when you start feeling these signs and symptoms kind of happening. And it's kind of interesting just to look at the prevalence of hip osteoarthritis when we're looking across countries, and we actually see the lowest rate and prevalence happening in Africa, and then followed by Asia, then North America, and then the highest prevalence actually in Europe. And we can see, you know, if we kind of think even just of the lifestyle of some of these, we might already start to understand why this could be. It's genetic purposes. It could be lifestyle in terms of the food that is more prevalent in Western cultures and, you know, North America and Europe, eating a little bit more, having a little bit more weight that we're putting on our body comparatively. But we also, what I thought was interesting was looking at the anatomical differences, and what they, you know, kind of pointed out was that there was a lower rate of acetabular dysplasia in people in Asia countries. So essentially meaning that the joint isn't as predisposed for injury when we're looking in kind of other Asian cultures, and there's a deeper size of the acetabulum. So there, that means, you know, it's kind of deeper into the socket. So there's going to be, you can have limited range of motion. You can have, you know, it could cause a bit more injury in terms of impingement and movement in European culture. So it's kind of interesting to look at even anatomical, genetic, and cultural differences and what we see prevalent with hip OA.
Yeah, and I mean, one last thing that we saw was that hip OA can become more common in women after menopause than in men. And they think that this has something to do with the protective effect of estrogen. And then, there are just several different studies that support this hypothesis because of like the protective mechanism of estrogen with women. And that's where sometimes they might recommend estrogen replacement therapies, especially in people who are predisposed to having different arthritic conditions or other bone disorders. But I think one of the main things we want to get to is like, okay, what to do?
Yeah.
What can I do to help this? And one of the questions that a lot of the studies were trying to answer was, okay, so some of the predictors of poor progression of hip OA have to do with really poor range of motion, people who have a severe amount of pain, and if there's any sort of cognitive decline or other significant comorbidities. So essentially, if you get hip OA to the point where it's severe, it's debilitating, it's limiting your range of motion, and your pain is severe, that puts you at a very poor prognosis for mm-hmm. how it's going to progress. Mm-hmm. So the question is, how do we catch it early? Mm-hmm. How do we catch people who might be starting to develop, you know, mild to moderate amounts of OA, but not have significant symptoms yet, so that they can start to be proactive about this?
Yeah.
And that's the challenge, because unless we're doing images on everybody to see like, okay, how's your hip look? Right after we talked about how your hip looks doesn't necessarily dictate your pain, but you know, there could be a mild correlation there. And so if people knew, could they be more proactive about it? I think our message is just, we should all be proactive about our joint health.
Exactly.
We should all be focusing on how we can keep our joints strong and healthy, regardless of how they look on the image. So How do we prepare people to do that based on the information that we have?
Well, you know, one study was looking particularly at trying to determine exactly what people could do. So a panel of experts kind of agreed that a baseline assessment with a follow-up was an important component of delivering the best practices for this therapeutic exercise for knee and or hip OA. And really what they're looking at for this baseline assessment is taking in the whole biopsychosocial model. So we're looking at the individual's report of difficulties. We're looking at their physical limitations, their functional restrictions, their impact on participation out in the world, relevant psychosocial factors, the individual's overall health. So including any comorbidities that might be happening and any underlying serious pathology or contraindications that, you know, can affect therapeutic exercise. So we're taking in the entire person. And I think that is what's so crucial and important to understand here. It's not just let me check your range of motion and let me see how strong you are. It's let me take in your life experiences, what's happening in the background, and all kinds of things within your life to really look at the bigger picture of what leads into pain as well.
Yeah, we see it so consistently in different rehab protocols, or especially something like this, which is essentially a lifestyle change. Mm-hmm. Like if you're starting to have hip osteoarthritis symptoms, it's going to take a lifestyle change to consistently improve your quality of life, the pain numbers, your functionality. So it needs to be something you enjoy. And mm-hmm. that's when people have the best success or compliance in those lifestyle behavior changes. It's not like, hey, I hate strength training, so I'm going to use strength training as my primary way to improve my hip osteoarthritis. No, like you need to choose something that you're going to enjoy, whether that's bike riding, whether that's dance classes, whether that's, you know, yoga, like a variation of an exercise that you get fulfillment out of, that you take enjoyment away from, that also might include some components of strength, range of motion, balance, you know, all the things that are going to help us create a stronger and more resilient hip in the long term.
Well, and that's where, you know, they also looked at, and the reality of things is that there's no single type of exercise that's recommended over another. It's really important for the type of exercise to be selected directly based on the impairments or functional limitations of that particular individual. And that's why, again, we can't just say, oh, you know, you have hip OA, or oh, you saw it on a radiograph, here's exactly what you should do. It really should be individualized. And that's hard for people. And it's also, you know, really important that it's reproducible for you. So if you do not have access, if you go to a physical therapy office and you're using, you know, some fancy equipment, but then you can't reproduce that at home, there's not really adherence to be able to maintain that exercise then. So what are we doing and what are we providing you that's making sure it's easy to achieve and it doesn't require some extensive equipment in order to maintain it? You know, the ability to perform it without supervision is also very important.
And outside of that, I think that there's huge value to being with someone in person to start this.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's important that you can do the exercises on your own or at home by yourself, but being with somebody who can do that assessment, talk with you, come up with the best plan that you're going to be able to enjoy doing, adhere to at home, it is so valuable having someone with that trained eye to know, okay, you're limited in these areas. Here's a few things that you can do to work on strength. What type of equipment do you have at home? And I think the research also supports that having someone to guide you through that process is much more successful than getting exercises and just trying to self-maintain a program at home.
Well, and that's why I also hate like the little exercise papers that you get at a typical physical therapy clinic. If you're getting those, make sure you're saying, okay, if this is what I'm doing, how do I progress it if I'm feeling better? How do I modify it if I'm having a flare-up? Because pain flare-ups are going to happen, especially if you're going through times, you know, of stress or you're losing someone or whatever is happening in life that increases our pain thresholds, or it decreases our pain threshold and actually increases pain sensitivity. So how are we modifying around to so that we can continue to move and not feel defeated or fear that movement and exercise, but we're getting adequately guided? And, you know, I'm just going to toot my own horn real quick and say it's really awesome to see people, you know, going through our last challenge, our Strong Healthy Joints Challenge, and be able to hear the feedback of listening to your cues and getting your modifications allowed me to feel more confident in movement, yeah. Allowed me to do exercises, allowed me to increase my strength in or my load in exercises to a place that I didn't think I was able to do. And yeah. That's really cool. Again, that guidance, that having someone expertly cue you and guide you, modify as needed for your body is so huge so that you don't fear moving, because exercise in the end is the only way that we're going to continue to improve. And we're also looking at, like, you know, it's not always going to be what some of the, you know, studies have shown, is that it's not always going to be the thing that's going to reduce the pain symptoms, unfortunately, but it can help hugely improve your function.
Yeah, which that's where are we measuring improvement? If we're solely like, I need this pain to come down and that's the only thing that's I'm going to see as a benefit, like Jen said, sometimes the exercise might not significantly reduce that pain or, you know, do so at all. But it might help you go up and down the stairs more effectively. It might help you be able to walk out to a field to watch your grandson or your son's baseball game or something like that. So if there's improvement function and the pain stays the same, a lot of the times we'll call that improvement, right? Because you can do more. Hopefully that increases your quality of life to some degree, even if the pain is not improving. And generally on our podcast, like, this isn't where we're going to tell you, oh, go get a hip replacement or not. Hip replacements, honestly, very high success rate, very, you know, good success rate at bringing pain levels down. You know, they do some amazing
function.
Yeah, and improving function. They do some amazing things with joint replacements, especially hip replacements these days. And that's where, in the type of scenario where you already have significant reduction in, you know, range of motion, function, super high levels of pain, there might be some other comorbidities involved, that's when you might want to get with an orthopedic surgeon and say, like, hey, what are my options? Because my outlook doesn't look great as far as this improving, you know, with exercise. If you're somebody who, this is where we're talking to the people with, you know, mild to moderate symptoms or joint degeneration, there is opportunity to improve the resilience and longevity of that joint in a way that we might be able to delay a replacement if we get one at all. But I just wanted to say there is, you know, a very good success rate of people who do decide to get hip joint replacements.
Yeah, and I think that's really important to point out, especially, you know, we have one of our really good friends, Jill Miller. She actually had a hip replacement herself as well. She's not, you know, in her 60s, but she got it because genetics for her plays a role in her tissue laxity. And she also, you know, put her joint in extreme ranges when she was doing a lot of different types of yoga where, you know, putting your leg behind your head and doing things that were beyond the normal range of motion that we're trying to achieve. And because she already has hypermobility and hyperlaxity within her joints, it caused a lot of stress to her joints. So in her case, getting the joint replacement really helped to now improve. So she's back to HIIT training. She's back to strength training. She's back to, you know, all of the improving her range of motion, not having any pain or symptoms, and being able to do all of these things. So it's not like you get a joint a hip replacement and you're out for the count. You can get back to lifting heavy and being explosive and dynamic within your movement. So it depends on, you know, where you are along your journey.
You know, something that we've talked about at length on different podcasts is different modalities like electrotherapy or e-stim, you know, joint mobilizations and manual therapy. Mm-hmm. What are some other ones?
They looked at acupuncture as
Acupuncture. And as far as hip osteoarthritis, especially for electrotherapy, acupuncture, they didn't find in studies that they were as effective for bringing down pain or improving function. There was some benefit to manual therapy as far as, you know, impacting or altering pain sensation for some people, but ultimately that's not going to make the difference long term. It could provide, you know, some relief, different manual therapies to get people to be able to do more exercise, build up strength, build up the range of motion, but ultimately they weren't seen as long-term fix. There's some things in the research that discusses posture, sitting posture, shoes you should be wearing. And of course, all of these things that we do repetitively, if we're walking in certain types of shoes, that can put different pressures on our hips. If we're sitting in a way that is constantly putting our hips into extreme ranges of motion, that can impact the way that we feel or the, you know, the pressures that we're putting on our hips. So of course, those are always things that we should be paying attention to and finding those times we might be putting repetitive undue stress on the hip joint.
Yeah. So essentially, try not to wear heels if you can.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because that's just going to put a lot more pressure into that hip. Crossing the leg, something that a lot of women do, you know, are we always sitting in that cross-legged position? How often are we sitting in that?
Is it always one leg over the
other? Is it always one leg over the other? Are we strengthening in other directions? Are we moving in other directions? It's so important that it's not just about one thing or one thing you're cutting out, but what are you also including and adding that's helping with the overall range of motion, and so that we're not getting stuck essentially in one range. And, you know, if you do need a little bit more support when you're sleeping, I mean, we have a whole sleep podcast where we talk about different positions that can be supportive for sleep to help reduce stress and pain. But if you're laying on your side, put a pillow either between your legs, or I love to use a body pillow and put my leg on top of it, because then that keeps my hips into a good alignment. Some people might need less flexion. So maybe you can't get your knee up as high, but you put a pillow between your legs and you kind of have your legs at less than a 90 degree angle, and it can help to take off some stress. If you're laying on your back, put a pillow underneath your knees, you know. So how can you find support with those pillows to help take off some of the stress that you might be feeling?
Things about if you drive a lot and when you're in your car, your knees are higher, like above your hip level, you could sit on a pillow, especially if the seat kind of dumps back, sit on a pillow or a rolled up towel in a way that helps bring your knees a little bit lower than your hips. So again, activity modifications, finding the times that you can take a little bit of that undue stress off the hips. But ultimately, trying to summarize what we've been talking about is we need to find the plan that's best for you.
Yeah.
We need to find the plan that you're going to enjoy the most, the exercise that specifically targets the areas that you might have deficiencies. That's why getting with somebody in person can be extremely beneficial to help set this plan in motion. And then finding some of the other things in life that we can alter. Maybe the way that we're sitting, maybe the way that we're sleeping, maybe the shoes that we're wearing.
And everything in your life, right? Biopsychosocial. So are you getting emotional support? Do you have... are your finances kind of causing you stress? How can you get support in that area? Where in your life are you adding stress? Are we not getting enough water? Are we not getting enough sleep? All of these things really impact our pain threshold. So we have to look at the entire picture when it comes to reducing pain, and we have to keep moving when it comes to reducing function. And if we can take, you know, put those two in play together, I think we'll have a lot more success within our life. And of course, if you are feeling like you don't even want to get to that point, you're not sure, maybe you've had instances of feeling a little bit of hip discomfort and you're not wanting it to turn into hip osteoarthritis, we do have a hip plan on Gen Health. We have a full body low impact plan as well to help get you confident in lifting weights again and feeling mm-hmm. good. Again, I hear over and over and over again how many people are helped and feel something different when they're moving weight in a different way and using the cues that I utilize to find how they can confidently move their body and load their body in a different way. And it's just so cool to see.
We just talked to someone recently. I'll continue to kind of like toot Jen's horn and toot the horn of the Gen Health platform. Because like she mentioned, like so many people come into the platform with fear about going back into strength mm-hmm. training or resistance training or loading their joints because they've had bad experiences in the past. And the person we just talked to recently said that Jen just says it and cues it in a way that makes sense. And she does it in a way that helps it click with my body. And we've heard that so many times from people. So if you feel like you're somebody who's like, yeah, I kind of avoid strength training, come on in. You can use code Optimal. Our podcast audience can always use code Optimal to get a discount on any of the courses or the membership to hop into that hip plan or the full body low impact plan to start treating that hip right and maybe building some more strength back into that body in a way that you might not have felt before. Thanks so much for sticking around for another PT Pearl. Now remember, we are all going through the Barefoot mini course starting on June 3rd. It's going to be our little barefoot summer challenge to get those feet ready to be barefoot outside in the grass or at the beach. This course takes you through 2 weeks of assessment and then addressing the restrictions that you find. It's still on discount, but as our podcast audience, we're giving you a special discount. On top of that, you can get an extra $10 off if you use code OPTIMAL10 at checkout. You can find the link down in the show notes, but it's just gen.health/barefoot, and make sure you use code OPTIMAL10 at checkout to get that extra discount. And of course, we'll see you on the next episode of the Optimal Body Podcast.